Hi, it's Patrick, and here's Alina Simone with a big, big question.
How do cocktails get such evocative names?
It's time to find out. And where better to do that than in a bar? So pull up a stool and listen to the stories of the bartender, a man who's made it almost a second career to answer that big question and to name a few cocktails of his own. Here again is Alina.
We're used to the idea of bartender as therapist, a great shoulder to cry on, but bartender as poet, as historian, as multilinguistic wizard. I admit that I was guilty of my own prejudice until I met bar owner and cocktail consultant Joaquin Simo. Well, it turns out bartenders are always on the hunt for literary as well as libaceous inspiration, from iPod playlists to more old-fashioned sources.
One of the best ways to name drinks is just pick up a racing form, because someone's already done all the heavy lifting of thinking of a short, quippy, memorable name.
But sometimes the search for a name starts out with a hunch, an elusive kind of feeling. The perfect visual can help.
Sprezzatura is that great, like, Italian, almost like stylish, disheveled thing, you know, where you see like an Italian guy in an impeccably tailored suit and a perfect shirt, except his cuffs aren't done. These little details that you're like, is that on, is kind of rackish and awesome and stylish, but I'm not sure. So, you know, we had this great drink and, you know, I wanted it to be elegant and stylish and sexy. And so Sprezzatura Royale, it turned out to be.
Okay. But what kind of name do you get by relying on your taste buds alone, without help from Twitter, sexy Italians, or racing forms? I decided to invite an expert to Pouring Ribbons, Joaquin's bar, my friend, stand-up comedian, Eugene Merman. Spending a lot of time in bars has kind of made Eugene the equivalent of a foodie, a drinky.
Oh boy. There are three beautiful drinks in front of me. One has what can only be described as very valuable grass in it.
Eugene is trying two classic cocktails and one house original. The first two are a couple hundred years old, the last drink only weeks old. Unfortunately, the first name that Eugene comes up with can't be aired on public radio. Sorry, guys. On to drink two.
First of all, it's very good. It's very refreshing. I'm going to call it the Citrus Good Morning.
It's like what you'd pour on your feet to start your day, Eugene says. Turns out he wasn't far off. This classic cocktail is called the Corpse Reviver No. 2. It's one of a class of drinks intended to be consumed first thing in the morning to ward off the hangover. Good luck with that. Now with the last drink, the one with that stalk of valuable grass in it, better known as dill.
7 days in the grave.
Like, that's what it tastes like?
It tastes like, yeah, it tastes like, you know, I can obviously taste the flesh. And it's not fresh, but it's not so old that you're like, yuck. I basically either named a drink or poorly described World War I.
7 days in the grave is a pretty awesome name, but Joaquin's is even better. The bitter taste of calm. Turns out the story behind the name is just as memorable. Whenever one of Joaquin's business partners has to board a flight, he takes a pill for anxiety, which he grinds slowly between his teeth.
As he's chewing, he just looks and turns and says, the bitter taste of calm. And because there are so many things that are kind of bitter and savory in this drink, that name struck me immediately. I was like, we've got to name a drink after this. It's one of my favorite expressions. So that's where that name came from.
When you're naming a drink, nothing quite beats life experience, except maybe one's native tongue. Joaquin was born in Quito, Ecuador, and often looks south of the border for linguistic inspiration.
I'm a firm believer that anything in Spanish is going to sound better than anything in English. Like fork, bah, tenedor, that's elegant, you know, that's really cool. You know, beet, meh, remolacha, that's awesome.
But spiking a cocktail menu with Spanish doesn't always work. Take the time one of Joaquin's coworkers tried to update a Prohibition-era cocktail called the Monkey Gland.
Well, Monkey Gland does not work in Spanish at all. It actually, not that it sounds that great in English, but Glándula del Mono.
Then Joaquin wows me with another great factoid from his seemingly bottomless archive. The original Monkey Gland got its name from a dubious surgical procedure invented by Russian doctor Serge Voronoff, where grafts of monkey testicles were transplanted into guys hoping for a Viagra-like effect. Turns out that's another naming trick, Joaquin tells me. Get people thinking, if I order this, I'm destined for love tonight. I'll drink to that. If you were to overnight. For the world, from New York, this is Alina Simone.
And if you didn't catch it in the song, Monkey Gland just got name-checked from Irving Berlin, no less. If you're too old for dancing, get yourself a monkey gland. Okay, back now to bartender Joaquin Simo. Here he is talking about the approaches that he and some of his rivals have to naming cocktails.
If you were riffing on a classic, maybe you reference the name of that classic in a cocktail. So say there's this great old classic cocktail called the 20th Century Cocktail. And it wasn't named after the century. It was named after a railroad, specifically this very famous railroad line that ran from New York to Chicago. And it could make that trip in 20 hours, which was then a staggeringly short time. And this was like the very height of luxury. It was gin, white creme de cacao, Lillet Blanc, and lemon juice. And, you know, this lovely drink comes from 1938. Fast forward to maybe about 6 years ago, no, more than that, probably like 8 years ago, and a bartender named Brian Miller loves this drink but wants to do a riff on it with bourbon, substitutes Lillet Rouge for the Lillet Blanc, bourbon for the gin, otherwise keeps it the same, calls it a 19th century, kind of going back to the heyday of bourbon. You know, years later, I'm playing around with a couple of new ingredients, a really beautiful floral bisco, a cacao bean distillate, and I'm thinking back to what was the beginning of bisco distillation in Peru. And that was in the 17th century. So I was like, oh, great, you know, I've got the 17th century cocktail. So I was all set to name it that, and then all of a sudden, one of my staff members informed me that the 17th century name had been taken by Phil Ward. He had taken it for a mezcal drink. I was like, all right, fine. Phil got to it first. I ended up having to rename it the Colonial Affair, which was the name of a racehorse. But so that was one where the original inspiration was a classic. I tried to name it in such a way to tie it to that classic, and I ended up having to rename it entirely. Sometimes just the fact that the menu's got to go to print forces your hand. On our very first menu, we realized we needed one more drink, and we named it after pretty much the time constraint we were under. So it was a drink called the 11th Hour. Some people thought it was a Doctor Who reference. Some people, you know, I mean, it was great. It worked on a lot of different levels for people, but it was definitely because it was the drink we came up with like the night before we had to start doing the staff training. So, you know, it was that time. It was done at the 11th hour. So sometimes a drink ends up being named that.
Whoa, everyone's naming drinks. I feel pressured to come up with some myself. Okay, give me a couple of minutes. In the meantime, here's Joaquin talking about the beginnings of cocktail culture and cocktail naming.
Cocktail in the 1800s meant one drink. It meant sugar, water, bitters, and spirit of any kind. That would have been the first definition of cocktail as a specific drink, which would have been in 1806 at the Columbia Balance and Repository newspaper. It was actually in a response to a letter to the editor. The editor in question was a fairly rabid anti-federalist, had a real grudge against Jefferson, who had shut down a New York City newspaper that he had been the editor of for being critical of him. So he got kind of moved out to the Hudson River Valley, still harboring this grudge. He writes an article about how many tankards of wine, how much beer, how many cocktails, how many of this had been served at a getting out the vote rally for a Jeffersonian candidate. And a letter to the editor published the next week says, oh, you know, I've heard of, you know, X, Y, and Z, but I've never heard of this cocktail of which you speak. And so the editor responds, well, you know, a cocktail commonly called a bittered sling is comprised of sugar, water, bitters, and spirit of any kind. And he goes on to say that it is of great use to a Democratic candidate for a voter having swallowed a glass of it is ready to swallow anything else. I think there's also a line about how it renders the heart stout and bold as it befuddles the mind. You know, I mean, all these like digs of a political bent, which have led modern historians to believe that there was no actual letter to the editor, that he'd written it just so he could get those jabs in the reply, which would be really fun. But so you had a cocktail meant one thing, and now we think of it as all drinks. So just the way kind of martini turned into anything served in that glass in the 90s, cocktail kind of outgrew that. And so what we now know as cocktail, it would be an old-fashioned, because you had these old guys who would walk into their saloon, and with the kind of introduction of new modifiers like curacao. If you added a little bit of curacao to your cocktail, then that made it a fancy cocktail. If you added some of that newfangled maraschino liqueur and maybe a dash of that new absinthe, maybe wiped a little lemon peel, that was an improved cocktail. You had all these crusty old guys who walk into their saloon and be like, I don't want any of that fancy or improved. I just want an old-fashioned cocktail. And they kept calling for an old-fashioned cocktail, and eventually it just became the old-fashioned. And so we stuck with the modifier rather than the actual noun, and the noun became a much greater umbrella term.
Who knew? Okay, time now for my attempt at a cocktail name. I've taken a leaf or two from Joaquin's book. He borrows from racehorse names, and I'm borrowing from band names. Actually, fictional band names. Fictional for the most part. The Big Show's Clark Boyd and I, we maintain a list of band names. A few of them are real band names, but most are fictional. They're based on weird turns of phrases that we see, or crazy sounding headlines or story slugs, and we just think they would make great names for bands. The trouble is, we've had the list going for so long that I can no longer remember the sources for most of these names, and in fact I can't remember which ones are real and which ones are fictional. And most of these band names, they would not make good cocktail names, at least if you want people to buy and, you know, enjoy the drinks. Like Commercially Important Fish, or 75% Horse Meat, or this is a good one, Swindon Biomass. Horrible, right? But how about this? The Final Samba. Better. Or Portsmouth Landlady. There's a story there. Looking down the list here, no, no, definitely no. Oh, here goes. The Axis of Apathy. It's got a ring to it. Here's another. Dirk Bogarde's Fifth Wife. I like that. I've no idea where it came from, but it's funny, given that Dirk Bogarde, he never married. There'd be mystery and deception in that cocktail. Well, we have photos of the real cocktails in Alina's piece at pri.org/language. Yes, you too can see what a corpse reviver looks like. There's also a picture of Joaquin Simo preparing a cocktail and Eugene Merman tasting one. I'll see you on Facebook at the World in Words page, or on Twitter. I tweet under the name Patricox, Patricox. Cheers.